Seth was always a serious person, a man of strong feelings, but there grew a darker dimension to him after the shock of Alison's death. But why did he wait so long before doing what you say he did? According to Liz, about 18 months ago he read an article in a magazine about a woman who showed symptoms like Alison's after receiving a relatively mild blow to the head. She crashed her car. Shortly after he'd read this and started thinking about the implications, Liz ran off from her hospital and came here. So since she'd been a nurse, he talked to her about it and she agreed it was a definite possibility. Next, Seth began to study the subject himself. I even saw two books on the human brain in his workshop when I found Gil's number in his notebook. Liz told me she'd written it down for him when she was here. He must have torn it out in anger after he heard Gil would be at the Eastvale demo, the man who'd robbed him of his wife and child. He'd repressed his anger, and it had festered. So when Osmond mentioned the number that afternoon, I imagined something gave. I shouldn't imagine he really believed he would kill Gil, but he found himself near the front of the crowd, and he had the knife. Then he saw the number on Gil's epaulette, and... "My God," said Zoe. "So that's it." "What?" "When they charged. I was next to Seth. The first thing that policeman did was lash out at a woman. I looked at Seth and saw an expression on his face that was... I can't really describe it, but he looked different. So full of hate." They all remained silent. Yes, what Seth was seeing, Banks thought, was a replay of what happened to Alison. Therefore, what Seth had done became even more understandable. He'd been pushed beyond breaking point. "Do you think Seth was right?" Mara said.
"About what?"
"About Gil being responsible for Alison's death."
"Well, there's a good chance, yes. I've spoken to the police doctor about it, and he agrees. But we'll never know for sure. Liz Dale, though, was wrong. Alison wasn't murdered. Gil might not have been a good policeman, but he didn't intend to kill her.
Even so, Seth had lost his wife and unborn child, everything he valued, in the most horrible way. He had to hit back or go mad." Mara covered her face with her hands and started to cry.
"But why couldn't he be happy here? With me?"
Banks had no answer to that. He rose from the chair. He'd done his job, solved the crime. But for Mara, it didn't end there. For her, this was only the beginning of the real pain. He opened the door. The late afternoon sunshine flooded in, and all the way home in the car, through the wraiths of mist, Banks could hear the wind chimes ringing in his ears. The rain had stopped, and the late afternoon sun was charming wraiths of mist from the river meadows and valley sides. When Banks's Cortina pulled up outside the farmhouse, Mara let him in. The children were sitting at the table colouring, and Paul was slouched on a beanbag cushion reading a science fiction book.
"Where are Rick and Zoe?"
"Working."
"Can you get them, please?"
Banks made himself comfortable in the rocking chair while Mara went out to the barn and fetched the others.
"What the bloody hell is this?" said Rick. "Haven't we had enough?"
"Well, it's all over now. Almost, anyway."
Banks lit a cigarette and turned to Paul. "You wrote that suicide note, didn't you?"
"What are you talking about?"
"Oh, come off it. Why did you do it?"
"I didn't do anything."
They were all staring at him now, and he began to turn red.
"All right. I'll tell you why you did it. To deflect the blame from yourself."
"Now, wait a minute," said Mara. "Are you accusing him of killing Seth?"
"Nope. Nobody killed Seth. He did it himself. When Paul found him, he was already dead. So Paul took the opportunity to type out a confession note, hoping it would get him off the hook. Right, Paul?"
Paul said nothing.